Thanks, Rebecca. That was great. You set things up nicely, really nicely, and especially the part about where I am not a soil scientist. She said wildlife, conservation, biologist, I do other things. Okay, so don't pick on me too hard when I don't know much about soils. What we're really dealing with are these amendments that we're trying is, I think Rebecca said it really well. This is not the first time this stuff has been done. It's not the first time amendments have been applied to soil by a long shot. It's been going on for probably millennia, where people have been making additions to the soil to improve the soil conditions for slightly different reasons and different objectives. We're taking on the objective that, and from a biodiversity standpoint, we would like to make amendments to the soil that ultimately lead to a biodiverse system that's hopefully gets up and running by itself and has all sorts of qualities, including increased biodiversity. But one of the main things is reduction in water and water usage. So, and I think with that comes a lot of other benefits. So I want to talk about this as a key first step in revitalizing these desertified soils, but also all sorts of other soils we'll talk about. Here's our group leaders, a bunch of people Rebecca mentioned, and they represent a huge team of people that are working, and we're trying to expand this network to people working all over the world in hopefully different systems. The problem is obvious. It's not just the Dust Bowl in the U.S. It's not as parochial as that. It's huge, it's extensive, it's global. And it's obvious when you get events like this. Dust storms that are monstrous, that are huge, erosion, 200 billion tons of sand settling in on Beijing in a two-day period. That's China, just to show you the extent of the global issue. And here's Phoenix, Arizona. And there's Phoenix, Arizona, November 3rd. What's that, 3 days ago? Where is it? 3 days ago. Right there. Same thing. It's a huge problem. There are all sorts of natural phenomena associated with it, of course, but a lot of it is due to our degradation of soils, and we've basically taken off the cover that's kept the soils in place. So there are a couple we like to call them different strategies that are being applied to deal with this. We're not the first ones to have seen this, obviously, and it's there's a lot of effort to reverse the flow. Rebecca showed you that unbelievable hold and stabilize strategy of people physically putting rice straw or wheat straw vertically in the ground to prevent wind from blowing sands. And that would get things started, and hopefully through time and maybe enough time, then the soil would become stabilized and you let nature take its course. That seems to be a really long process. A little bit faster is tree planting is going on everywhere, all across China for sure. In fact, all over the world, people are planting trees, and very specifically, initially, to stop the erosion. This is what I consider a hold and stabilize strategy. And then, of course, there's a whole other suite of strategies that help us grow vegetation on degraded soils. And I think I'm labeling it like a life support. And you're bringing in water and nutrients. You can grow anything, almost anything, on anything. I liken this to hydroponics. This is the air. I just pulled this out. One of the Arizona Cooperative Extension bulletin or a fact sheet, and they calculated that's typical citrus growing plant. Bring in water. How much water a day you can grow it takes to grow an orange tree? It looks like for a mature orange tree about 35 gallons of water per day. So if you bring the water in and you bring the nutrients in, as long as you have some kind of place to hold the roots, you can grow anything. This is a life support thing. This is very short term. So we consider these hold strategies are vital and useful. The life support are vital and useful because we need to grow things now. And then, of course, some of the amendments we think about are short term solutions also. We're shooting for longer term solutions. We're hoping that the use of some of these soil amendments, we could aim for longer-term solutions and maybe some that'll kind of take over the process for us, so we don't have to keep inputting energy and effort and nutrients and water, more specifically. So here's Rebecca showed you this. The guys from Colorado State came out with, I think, a good definition that we like, and that's, improving the physical properties. Amendments improve physical properties, water retention, permeability, water infiltration, drainage, aeration, and structure. So these are the types of objectives we want to shoot for when we're doing amendments. And we want to shoot for them in a way that creates a longer-term solution, not just some quick fix, and something that needs to be applied and continually applied all the time. So mulch is an interesting strategy that's being applied all over the world, and it works, and it has certain benefits. And compost, of course, is has lots of benefits, nutrients, immediate release of nutrients, same with the lighter organic materials, and they disappear quickly. And we've been really looking at some of the longer-term solutions, and that comes in the form of basically shrubs, twigs, branches, trees, and even treetops, entire treetops, because we're living in the Northeast where there's a lot of big trees and a lot of forestry going on. So we've been experimenting with really large, piles of wood left on the ground and all the benefits that brings. Okay, so our thought is we want to do soil amendments. Soil amendments then will, especially in the form of wood chips, twigs, mulch that stays a while, organic material that stays a while, this organic matter starts building up as opposed to disappearing quickly. The buildup then creates a platform for life, starting with soil biota and going up from there. From the soil biota, we get this whole system up and running, and we like to call it jump start. We're jump starting or accelerating or jumping up to some trajectory instead of waiting for time to take its course over millennia, possibly. We're pushing things up faster at an accelerated rate. Organic matter buildup, hopefully, and ultimately an ecosystem formation over the top of it. So we're trying to provide a platform, I guess, for an ecosystem to get started. And hopefully this would be a self-sustaining ecosystem. Some of the story starts back, I told you, we're doing work in the Northeast and around Cornell University. Here's the landscape around there. If you've ever been up there, it's upstate New York. Lots of forested landscape. So it gives us an opportunity to work on the big, big amounts of wood. Here's, seems a little bit odd to be talking about this from this angle, but bear with me for a minute. During our natural forestry techniques, normal thinning, regeneration cuts, we remove trees in between and leave standing a future crop. Your choices at that point are to leave the tops of the trees on the ground or to remove them and sell and send them off to market or use them for firewood, use all sorts of biofuels, all things. We've tried different techniques, and one of the things that I was most interested in was looking at the effects of leaving down woody material on the ground, and these effects are multiple. First and foremost, there's environmental effects through, this is just one little small segment of some of the studies I've been doing over the last years. We're probably up to several, actually thousand data loggers out around underneath. It's usually a pair of designs, so it's straightforward. Inside of one of these loosely consolidated piles of treetops and branches, we'll have temperature measurements, and there's always a paired measurement in an open soil nearby, so within 5 meters. So here's our paired measurements, and this is really what it looks like in virtually every single case. First, red is the bare soil, so a bare soil within 5 meters, and black is where temperatures are taken right underneath the loosely consolidated branches. Examine the red, going from temperatures from 10 degrees all the way up to 40 degrees, you can see one of the most important features is the high variability of the bare and open soil. No surprise here, when you put some shade or shelter over the top of the soil, it buffers, basically moderates the temperature fluctuation, so the range is much smaller. The peaks, and the reason why the range is smaller is because the peaks are much lower, and so the variance, the peak, and the mean daytime temperatures are all completely different. So he's just leaving material, woody material, even loosely consolidated stuff on the surface of the ground has an immediate environmental effect, and that's in temperature, and then of course it translates to all sorts of other things related and separate, and one of the most important is moisture. So here's soil moisture. I have, again, the paired sampling branches are in the lighter color and they ride above. And if you look at the y-axis is volumetric water content, so that's soil moisture. Starting from, I don't think I have the little pointer, but the upper left, soil moisture is going from 20 to 40%. So it's pretty wet there. It's really not much, thank you. Mm-hmm. It's really not too similar around here for sure. Okay, so
start off at under the branches, 3, 4%, 5%, 13%, and 3% higher moisture than their paired counterparts. And after 4 days of drought, so here's the rain, and then we let it dry out for four days. In all of these, by the end of 4 days, we've increased from 11, 10, 17, and 6% more moisture underneath these branches. Yes?
What kind of soil is that? What mixture?
That's a... Would you like to hit that, please? You're asking me a soils question after all that?
I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, it's okay.
Glacial? I think that's something wrong.
You did that on purpose, didn't you? Thanks, yes. It's wet, silty loam, thank you. Glacial, it's all glacial. And so after a few days, so this is a pattern, and you're going to see this pattern throughout. This is wet soil, it's different soil, and the question is, does this apply in other places? Immediately, that would be a question. Sure, that's wet, there's a lot of rainfall there, and the soil's different. So we take this over to Ningxia, in which the conditions are greatly different. The soil is very different. Sandy, dry climate is different. So we started. Bill from Lowell. So this is Harold Van Ness was nice enough to publish the model for us, and this is this picture. That's kind of the underpinning or the underlaying soil of the entire region, and you can see up on the surface is a lot of shifting sands. The climate is quite different now, and it's apparently going to be. This is one of the downscaled models. From the area that show us about a 2 to 2.5% increase in the next several years, so temperatures are only going to get warmer from what they are now. And rainfall, however, is, well, it's very variable in the nearby region, but it looks like anywhere from not too much different to maybe a slight increase in rain, which is not a bad thing. So we have something to work with here. This isn't just all doom and gloom where you have temperatures are rising out of control and rainfall is disappearing. We have something to work with, which makes us a little bit more confident or at least hopeful about using some of our techniques. So we've taken back in these very controlled chambers back at Cornell, we created soils that were the same composition texture as the soils in Ningxia, and in that we then did a whole bunch of microcosm studies in which we tried a series of different amendments to the soils. So I think the key here to this experiment was this is really an evaporative water loss experiment. How well do different textures and different elements, different components, different amendments, materials hold water during a drying period? So evaporative water loss experiments at a controlled climate chamber, 55 microcosms, were 10 treatments in a control. And here's the 10 treatments. They really were a series of woods. So we have locust trees and willow, and populus is all aspen tree. And then we had biochar and cattail leaves. So a bunch of different things. I want us to focus for these purposes here on these three. The control, of course, is in black. I'm going to always use 4% aspen wood chips incorporated into the soil. And I also want to point out wood chips incorporated in the soil, the same treatment, but in this case with some cover over the top. So a light cover of twigs over the top. And here we go. Here's the water, the initial watering, and then we didn't water for 34 days. We let it dry out in these controlled chambers. Everybody got the same treatment. After 1 week, 2 weeks, 4 weeks, these are all the differences. Black, remember, was the control. So there's the control, and then there's control with litter and no litter. So those two always dry faster, and no surprise, and quickly dry out. They stay below everybody else. The popular, the red one, which is 4% aspen, is somewhere in the middle, much higher than the control, and then even higher than that is the same treatment, but with litter over the top. So this is what we're looking at. These are, we felt pretty good about these results in terms of everything, because the control is always underperforms the amendments. And the woody amendments perform pretty darn well in terms of holding water. So, first, after a week, 18%. After 2 weeks, this is just wood chips alone incorporated in the soil. After 2 weeks, 18%. And after 4 weeks, 15% increase in soil moisture. So they really hold on. So this is a evaporation, or another way to look at this is moisture retention, soil retaining water, okay? For the Next, the other treatment, which was more extreme or performed better, this is populous wood chips mixed in the soil with a little light cover of simulated twigs over the top, and they performed even better. So after the first week, 25%, 2 weeks, 22%, and after 4 weeks, 18% more moisture, soil moisture inside that than the controls with no amendments. So in a very controlled study, these amendments and these woody amendments are performing well in terms of holding onto water. Simultaneously, we're working in the soils of Ningxia, outside of the chambers, and in the real world. Here's the Ningxia Forestry Institute, which this is in Yinchuan in Ningxia, China. And that's northern, Rebecca showed you where it was. It's up near Inner Mongolia, northern middle of China, let's say. 300 hectares of the Forestry Institute, and then our Google Earth image of our plots that we set up here. So here's our soil amendment study in the plots. And the plots were just big replicas of some of the things I just showed you here. One, several treatments, and I'll show you the treatments. Each treatment plot was 3 by 3 meters with 4 different treatments. One, surface mulch, which I was resistant to doing surface mulch because it just seems to be this technique that everybody uses all over, but it's not really what we were looking for. Not this technique that's gonna bring life to the soil. It's really just putting a blanket over the top of the soil. Harold Van Ness said, you gotta use mulch. Everybody uses mulch. Mulch is the most important thing in the world. Okay, so we chose that. So there's surface mulch, a layer of surface mulch over the top. That's one treatment. Another treatment was 5% wood chips mixed in. And again, it's the same genus. These are aspen tree here, mixed into the soil down to a depth of 20 centimeters. The same treatment, wood chips mixed into the soil, but over the top we also placed loose piles of, yes?
I think you can answer this question. That's all. How do you mix it?
Thank you. By hand. We did it by hand, right? We had shovels and we dug it in. So everything got turned over first, and everything got treated that way. And then with the wood chips, we actually put them in by volume, measured it by volume, and then mixed them all by hand and by shovels, down to 20 centimeters. Yes?
Yes, I was wondering too about the surface mulch material was. Is that also populous?
That was also populous, yeah. So, yes, and the only is aspen wood chips, same ones as we were incorporated into the soil. And then these were willow, though, and for our first year we were using willow. Yes?
You're the microcosm experiments.
Yep. They were all the way through. They were mixed throughout those. So those clear microcosms were complete microcosms, all mixed, thoroughly mixed, and everything was mixed the same. Those were also different wood, too. We had locust and willow, and so different ones, but certainly thoroughly mixed all the way through. That good? Okay, thanks. So willow over the top, and that's in our fourth treatment, I guess, was we used as our control. Also mixed soil, mixed unamended soil, mixed down to a depth of 20 centimeters. Here's the soil we were dealing with. It's actually an excellent picture. That's about what it looks like there. This is all in a randomized block setup. 4 treatments, 5 replicates, 2 different hydric environments. So we tried to mimic the rainfall there in half of this, just to make sure that we got a little bit of water. The rainfall there is roughly equivalent to 1 centimeter
every
10 days. And so we had a watering regime that mimicked about 1 centimeter every 10 days on half of this. Not too much water, but just enough to make it like it's the real rainfall. And I think that's it. 4 plots all told. This is what they look like. So here's our up close and personal of the plots. Inside those plots, of course, we had continuous data loggers. So the 2 things we were most concerned about here, at least initially, was temperature and soil moisture. So Decagon probes in the soil recording constant both of those, both soil temperature and moisture, soil moisture, and then hobo nodes to do environmental, but also we had relay stations set up so that these data could dump right to the computers in the lab. Okay, this one, so here's kind of really the entire, I'm not going to show you all the data, and you can see that they're everywhere, but this is the nature of all of the data. The black behind is air temperature. So you can see air temperature is a higher variance, it's much more variable, it's a big daytime range, And then the soil temperatures are all of these guys in color here. Of course, they're muted, they're moderated. You would expect soil temperatures to have a less, much narrower range during daily range and seasonal range, in fact. And they do. And then I have all the different treatments on here. I'm going to show you that a little bit more this time. So that's relative to air temperature. The black now is the control. So these are controlled soil temperatures. Here's that same thing. So during the growing season, mean temperatures from the growing and warm season slash warm season, ranging from 10 to 40 degrees overall. There's the control overlaid on top of the control. Our populous chips, so these are chips mixed in, and you can see they obviously affect the temperature, and they affect the temperature in a couple ways. One, by reducing the variation, the daily and seasonal, mostly daily variation, and they reduce variation by cutting off the high peaks for the most part, and that's populous chips that have an effect of moderating and reducing the temperature. The next one is populous chips because branches further reduce the variation and reduce the temperature. No surprise, you put a little more shade over it and it gets better. Here's the mulch. The surface mulch actually performed well in terms of temperature, in terms of reducing, and very similar to those guys. Here they all are together, and what it really looks like when you examine the heck out of these data, it looks like the control is more variable and has much higher daytime peaks. The populous chips is next in that it reduces the variability, and surface mulch does a pretty good job of reducing variability in temperature and moderating temperature. And lowering it, and populous chips with branches does the best job of reducing temperature. So in hot and hotter and drier and hotter conditions, then these have immediate effect. They start within a few hours of when you apply these amendments. You can start getting effects like this. But it's really, water takes a little bit longer. There's a little bit more here. This is what we've been, I think, a representation of all of the patterns that we've seen. And I don't want to show you all the data, but here are some really good ones. So here's soil moisture. Here are the four treatments. And on the bottom is control. Here's black again. Control right through a period during which, started off drying, and then we got a rain event. Water goes up, so soil moisture goes up, of course, and then it goes down. Watch the control. Control stays below. It's drier than all the rest. Goes up in the rain event, still below everybody else, and continues to diverge by evaporating faster than everything, or water running through. So it's very similar to those chamber experiments, almost exactly the same pattern in general. And one of the things to note is populous chips mixed in. As it rains, they actually capture more water. They get wetter faster, and they hold more water, and that's a capture of greater than 10% over controls. And after a few weeks, they're still holding more water to the tune of 5%, and that's the populous chips, just populous chips mixed in alone. So they have an effect on temperature, they have an effect on moisture. Here's another look at moisture, and again, here's water capture. This is what we saw overall. That was a really clean and nice look that had it a little bit flipped around. This is about the average, though. It looks like the green, which is populous chips and branches, is almost always performs better when it rains. It gets wetter. Gets wetter in a much higher, 14% wetter than control. It stays wetter, and ultimately, after several weeks, is at least 5% higher. Several weeks of drying. Rain event captures water. Several weeks later, still retains water. And then followed by populous chips that are mixed in. And they're still 8% and 3%. So pretty substantial gains by just putting wood chips into the thing, both in terms of temperature moderation and in terms of water holding capacity. So we went from the forests of Cornell, where went to the dry, sandy soils of Ningxia. We also did it in chambers. And why not? Let's try it in some of the other places. This is some of the collaborations that we started up in the past couple years at the Northern Great Plains Long-Term Agro-Ecosystem Research Laboratory in Mandan, North Dakota. Our collaborator, Dr. Mark Liebig, has been great to work with us. And I think there was a little bit of skepticism, might be, is that right? That just a little bit of skepticism, like, well, the soils are very different here. It's a whole different situation. There's really a lot going on, and I'm not sure these techniques would be really that functional in this place. So, of course, we tried it out, and here we go. The pattern is almost identical. Here's the soils no amendment, wood chips mixed into the soil, and then wood chips mixed in the soil with a light branch shelter over the top in the Mandan, North Dakota soils. And what we want to, I guess, look at the same thing. Here's the rain events up here. Rain, water capture in the chips plus branches is way higher than the water capture in the controls, which are down here. Those are controls. And as it dries out, it goes several days without rain. This looks very similar to Nisha, by the way. It goes a rain event, lots of drying out, and these guys stay way over. Another rain event. So at the end of several days or even weeks, July weeks of drying out, you can still get a gain of 10% soil moisture, even in the North Dakota soils. So it's happening in the wet soils, happening in dry soils, it's happening in intermediate soils. These are really effective just by putting wood chips into the ground. And of course, with the addition of shelter over the branch, shelter over the top, you get big effects both in temperature and in soil moisture. It seems kind of odd to be doing both Ningxia and North Dakota, but the reality is that the climates are very similar. I mean, not the habitat. There's Ningxia, there's North Dakota. This is unirrigated. This is highly irrigated. Huge differences. Not just soil type, but lots of other things. But not the climate. Look at the climate. Here's in yellow, we have average monthly temperature. Yellow is Ningxia, and blue is Mandan, North Dakota. Very similar. And monthly precipitation, the pattern is similar. It's a little bit higher peaks in Mandan, North Dakota, but the yellow is Ningxia. There's the pattern. Rainfall throughout the rainy season is the highest, and then it dissipates in both places. So they're really very similar, very similar. Big difference is soil type, soil texture, and not the climate. So we're hopeful that we can take this and maybe steer it at least in that direction. Now, we got a long way to go. I just showed you about temperature, and I showed you moisture, and it sounds hopeful that we can go much farther and turn it into that green image you saw from Mandan. But there's a lot more going on. We have a lot more measurements, and we're getting more and more evidence that this is starting to go in the direction we want. And so I'm calling these evidence of revitalization. It's not just environmental changes, but biological changes. And things are starting to get exciting. Here's maximum total porosity. I want to show you there's some other textural issues that go along with this. Total porosity, chips and branches and chips incorporated in change the porosity of the soil, no surprise. But look, mulch does not perform well there. That's not a surprise either. You're just putting it on the top of the soil. You're not affecting the soil matrix. The infiltration rate for chips, mulch, and chips and branches is pretty low. This is in Ningxia. This is where slowing down the water is key. Infiltration rate is super fast in control soils and where you just have surface applications. It's also fast in manure. Yep. Good. Yep. Okay, so these guys perform really well. Exciting issues. We're starting to get very high, much higher signals in life, starting with microbial life in the soil. And most importantly, the populous chips mixed in the soil are significantly and substantially higher respiration rates, microbial respiration, and even higher than that are populous chips in branches. And again, mulch does not perform as well, although it's better than control. So these amendments work well. They work well for temperature, for climate, for moisture, and they're starting to create life. And we're going to show you a little bit later. Dr. Lee's going to show you some details of what type of life is appearing in these, but really proteobacters, fungi, and acidobacteria are starting to proliferate inside these soils, these habitats, and mostly under the populus where the wood chips and branches are. Here's some of our study sites. So it's not just the basic life forms, but after 7 months, we started getting more advanced life forms like slime molds, which are amoebozoans. After 20 months, we were shocked to go there and look under these piles. And in the middle of these desert soils, in the middle of the summer, we see mushrooms and moss growing. And after 30 months or so, we started letting the vegetation grow, and the vegetation will grow inside these areas. So we'll get higher forms of life, lots of vegetation, and we're really heading there. And ultimately, I guess in this year, we're happy to see even higher forms of life. At least two species of lizards that I could tell, and two or so families of long-eared hedgehogs inhabiting our little branch wood shelters here. So we're building it, and they are coming. Life is happening. Soil amendments we started with, we're moderating soil temperatures, reducing daily and seasonal variance, and, of course, moderating the peak daytime temperature. We're increasing soil moisture, which is really important, and we're increasing soil moisture retention, which is vital, I think, for these holding on to life over the long term. It's cutting out these high variability. We're trying to create a substrate that's forming the basis for life, and then we're hoping that these can serve as a foundation for the initiation of a more complex ecosystem, and that we think that with the little bit of water in the form of rain, with some wood chips to hold on to this rain, we can actually end up with self-sustaining and hopefully self-governing ecosystems, very complex ecosystems, and that's where we're heading. Thank you.